Right. All kinds of stuff happens. All right, so I'll pack this away and we'll see how it goes.
Okay.
Like it's a little bit. Ah, we'll be fine. We'll be fine.
Yeah?
Yeah, we'll be fine. We're usually fine.
Okay.
All right.
No disasters yet.
No disasters yet. No catastrophic losses yet. I sometimes again have to dig into the mics and recover on device, like if some
Yeah.
cable breaks or whatever, but it usually works. I want to point out
Yeah.
something. Like we had some conversations the
Yeah.
last couple of days, delightful conversations,
Yeah.
and we, you know, like we everything from like skateboarding to metaphysics and so on. And like we'll hit. I think we'll hit a lot of these topics.
Yeah, I
But
hope
you
so.
mentioned something that kind of has been stuck in my mind ever since,
It's that there's no such thing as a ship.
and no, maybe we'll get to that as well. No. That was as you could tell, that wasn't as impressive to me as you thought it would be. But you mentioned that two people really impressed you in terms of their humility, and it was M.C. Escher
Yeah.
and George Carlin, the comedian.
Yeah, those
Like,
ones come to mind, yeah.
yeah, talk to me about that. Like, why? What has you? Why those two names? And what? Why are those people special to you?
So I actually went to see S's exhibition in Florence,
Yeah.
which was incredible.
Yeah.
And I actually didn't know he was a he did woodcutting and lithography. I think a lot of people don't know that, which just kind of nailed me because I was it made it so many times harder to do
Yeah.
and impressive. And afterwards, I think I went online. I read everything I possibly could about Escher, like everything. And and during that, there's actually a really good website. I can't remember what it's called, but it has a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And one of them is that he didn't know why he was so obsessed with doing woodcutting or lithography, but every day he woke up so thankful and blessed that that's what he wanted to do. So he understood that, you know, there's something outside of him
Yeah.
that blessed him with this need, and that it wasn't just pure self-determination.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people in the world today really think that they are the total of their decisions.
They're fully self-determined.
Yeah,
That's fully,
exactly. And
yeah.
I think that one of the things that comes out of that is that when you see people that are down and out or homeless and things, those people see those people as you made bad decisions.
Yeah, I see.
And I guess for me, and it's also part of, I guess, my identity as well. But yeah, for me, that just is like the one of the highest marks of a human.
Yeah.
Yeah, to understand that you didn't make everything happen in your life,
Yeah.
and but you should be thankful when it's good.
Yeah.
And George Carlin was definitely thankful for the life he'd been given,
Yeah.
or you know, being given might not be the right thing, but so I think
Yeah.
those are the last two people that I saw doing that.
Yeah.
And when I saw it, I just remember that instantly because I don't know, it just means a lot to see people. There are people like
Yeah.
that.
Yeah. No, I think the best people realize that, like, also, like, the people will still talk about, like, someone like whatever, and Marcus Aurelius and those kind of people.
Oh, yeah.
Like, and they will often point out that, you know, Jobs, interestingly enough, was one of these people as well. I know
Oh,
you
really?
don't think too highly of him, but he would often point out that
I'm willing to be wrong.
you like remember that, like, you're using a language that you didn't invent, for example. Like
Yeah.
the English language, like, you had nothing to
Oh,
do with
right.
it, you
Yeah,
know.
sure.
Like, and like all those kind of things, like he would point it out over and over again that there is a lot of things that you didn't create, and that you have to, like, the right attitude for that is thankfulness. And I think that's something that we as a society have kind of lost in some sense,
Yeah.
like especially like in the postmodern era, right? Like it's all everything that came before is evil, and like white man evil,
Oh,
and like, you
yeah.
know, like Western civilization evil, and so on. And like the thankfulness is gone in some sense. And so I appreciate when people kind of take the opposite route and bring that back. And I mean, I definitely had my own journey of finding a renewed appreciation for tradition, for example, you know, like for traditional values and so on.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, I imagine. So, I feel like also on, in the sovereign engineering context, that's in part what's happening as well, because the early internet pioneers, they had very radical ideas about how networking should be structured, for example.
Yeah.
You know, like the end-to-end principle, all those kind of things. And like, how can you build a decentralized network that doesn't instantly turn evil, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like we're in the business now, in part, of trying to revivify that tradition and kind of like, how can we build systems and how can we build networks that don't turn evil instantly, you know, like that's kind of one of the things. And one thing I want to point out is you come from the design side, and yesterday I tried to talk to everyone on the ship, and your name must have come up, I don't know, like half a dozen to a dozen times. Like everyone was very happy that you jumped in and made the lots of the projects more appealing from the UI UX side and so on, from the storytelling side and so on. And so talk to me about that, like how how come you ended up in that area, and how come you ended up in sovereign engineering in the first place, like both of these basically.
So how I ended up a designer?
Yeah.
I guess my first kind of love was chefing.
Chefing?
Yeah.
Yeah, you were a chef? There's some.
Yeah, for some time.
There's some Bitcoin chefs.
Yeah. I started when I was 13.
All right.
It was actually because of health. I was eating something and I was like, what the hell is in this? Yeah. And then my reaction to that was like, I want to know what's in my food, so I'm going to make it for scratch.
Interesting. Yes. So that helped you develop taste, I assume.
Yeah, help me. Presentation was a big thing.
Okay. I see.
I asked my mom how to cook an omelette, and then I cooked omelets for 3 months.
Yeah, in every way imaginable. It's a hard skill to master, as any French chef will tell you.
I don't know if it's clear that, but I think an aspect of that was like really like design, like thinking about how the food's going to fit together and look, and how it's going to taste together.
Yeah.
It's not that far off.
Yeah.
I'm not sure like it's an absolute connection, but
yeah,
that was my first kind of creative outlet, I think.
Yeah.
And then I was into computers. Mm-hmm. I thought they were amazing. I was into the internet. I remember asking my mom if I could have the internet. She was like, what the hell would you need the internet for? But like, I don't know where I picked it up. I'd read it somewhere, you know, before everyone had it. She became the biggest internet user ever. I was into early internet, early computers. So I decided not to go to the last 2 years in school in my country. You do your A-levels in school. I decided to go to college. Mm-hmm. Which is a bit of a lesser grade, but it meant I could do computers.
Yeah.
And during that, all I did was play Counter-Strike over the LAN.
Oh my God.
With everyone there.
One more commonality.
Yeah, but like literally all day, just like switch between screens when the teacher's there.
When did you start? What version did you start on?
I actually started on the first version.
But so
I hated it because I didn't understand there was recoil. Mm-hmm. And I was just shooting people.
But that was because there was, so 1.0?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Because there was 0.7 beta and like there were some versions
I didn't know about that.
Yeah.
It might have been that, I'm not sure.
Because it started as a Half-Life.
Yeah, I was a Half-Life.
Mod, so that was still when it was a Half-Life mod, right? And
Yeah.
Because I remember the first versions, so you had to sideload, like you had to actually run scripts in the console to make it work.
And maybe not.
The weapons would stay. No, that was pre 1.0. That was in the beta days.
I think
it would have been 1.0. And the weapons would remain on the ground between rounds. So if you would die with an AWP somewhere, and you respawn, you could run to the spot and grab it.
Oh, wow.
Like that was very, very early days because I was playing.
I think it would have been 1.0.
I was playing Half-Life Deathmatch before I was playing Counter-Strike.
Oh, I was too, yeah. Half-Life was blew my mind when it came out. Yeah. I thought it was incredible. Yeah. Like, I've always loved that game.
Fantastic.
Yeah, so it was
that brings back memories. Yeah. So you were doing that then in college?
Yeah.
Playing because the computers were networked, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Already, okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. When everyone stopped playing across it, I was like, quite sad, so I just started playing online. So it was pretty just me carrying on. I think everyone actually got to do their work.
Yeah, I see.
But then the first interesting thing came up. It was a website module, which I found interesting for some reason. I'm not sure why. It was just, to make a website was basically the program for that module.
Okay. I see.
And just at the very same time, I found out about Macromedia Flash.
Nice.
And I just went on and Two Advanced Studios.
Yeah.
Yeah. Two Advanced. It must have been Two Advanced. Yeah. Two Advanced Studios website.
I don't know about that. No.
Oh, they were like the kings of Flash back in the day.
Okay.
Like they had just had flagship websites.
Okay.
People would wait for them to update their own website.
I remember these websites, I probably know some of their work, but I don't know the studio behind them. I know there was one or two individuals that were really, really good. Okay. But it was the website where you would like wait like for 5 minutes to load, and there was like awesome loading bar progress animations and so on.
Like everything was animated in sounds. Like it was amazing.
Yeah, it was a multimedia experience. Yeah, yeah. Like for sure. Yeah.
I think it must have been that when I saw that, one of my friends showed me. Oh, it blew me away. Mm. And I was like, I want to make websites.
Yeah, I see. Yeah.
But my website making very much started in animation and like a lot of very like heavy kind of graphical stuff as opposed to like later just very static.
So you know all about like keyframes
I figured it out for myself because I've always been quite autodidactical to my sort of benefit but also sometimes not beneficial. So by figuring out how to do logical things on Flash for myself helped really like gave me a good foundation of logically how to do things rather than just knowing.
Yeah,
I think sometimes if you figure things out you can learn like a more foundational grasp of it because you used your own mind to work it out rather than someone else's information. But I think that that's what made me the designer I am, and I see other designers that were Flash designers that we got to start with, and they you can always tell like but with the
interesting. Yeah.
So now with vibe coding or whatever, you can designers can do that again.
Yeah,
I think
without using Flash. Yeah. Exactly. Flash was very dynamic. Like there was also lots of people were doing games in Flash, right? Like there were a lot of like now quasi famous famous Flash games because it was dynamic and programmable enough that you could actually build games in it.
And Newgrounds or something?
Yeah, Newgrounds got big on Flash and so on. Yeah. And it's still around as far as I know.
Yeah.
Or like at least an archived version of it or something.
Yeah, they even had series, Flash series.
Yeah.
Like, what's it called? The guy with the rusty spoon.
Oh, Salad Fingers. Yeah, that was it.
Yeah, I think that started as a Flash series. So you actually watched it in Flash.
Yeah. That was back in the very weird internet days. Like, almost all of the internet was very weird. It was only weirdos on the internet.
Yeah. I don't actually remember a lot of it. I think I might have been traumatized or something.
Yeah. The brain, that's how the brain works. If something's too traumatic, it just will, put it somewhere where where you can't access it easily.
Totally. There's a couple of things, but I'm not even going to mention the websites because I don't.
Yeah. No, let's
just
not.
Even the name is just horrible.
Let's not. Let's not. The clankers will auto-link stuff. Like, let's not risk it.
Oh, good.
All right. So you came from the Flash side, and explain that some more. What you just said at the end there.
Yeah.
That now, thanks to vibe coding and not having to write, CSS and JavaScript and everything else by hand.
Yeah.
As a designer, you can go back to the Flash days in some sense, or back to this way of doing it. Like, I think put some more meat on that bone.
Yeah, I think mainly you can do some unreasonable things because normally you'd have a front end guy doing the implementation.
Yeah.
And if I gave them my ideas, like...
Yeah, it would just be cost prohibitive. Like, it would be way too expensive to do.
Yeah, and I don't think that they'd do them as well as I could either.
Yeah.
So like I've like.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, because you implement it, once you remove design and implementation, the guy who implements it doesn't have the eye for the design and will get some of the details wrong.
Yeah, and that's been my life for like quite a while.
Yeah, yeah. Quite a while, yeah.
Yeah.
Ever since. Since the models, it only stopped very recently. Now we have models that are good enough where you can actually, as a designer, prompt them. Yeah. And it will just work, and you can iterate until you're happy from a design perspective, right?
Yeah. Yeah. A couple of times it might literally make a banger straight away.
Yeah.
But not often. It's not like consistent.
Yeah.
But like it's really like polishing a stone.
Yeah, absolutely.
Into a diamond. Yeah. And like I think a lot of people will give up sooner than I do.
Yeah.
Like I'll just keep on going until it's a diamond.
Absolutely.
And then at the end, but like, so it's not always easy.
Yeah.
But it's incredibly easy.
And that's what I wrote about this recently. Like the last, I don't know, 18 months or so have been the bane of my existence because I developed an allergy for LLM slop. I mean, for you as a designer, it must be the same. For me, it's mostly writing.
Hmm.
Like words and paragraphs are something I really care about.
I hate AI analogies.
And it's just like, it happens at the frequent, like it started happening like 18 months ago or so, maybe even a little longer than that. But now absolutely, like no one writes anymore. It's all just like vibe slop, like Claude, like write a whatever article about the thing I just did. Mm-hmm. And the polishing is completely absent. Like it's just one shot, and because people aren't writers and they don't know anything about sentence structures or words or paragraphs or whatever, they'll just read through it once or glance at it once and like, oh, that's great. And just like hit post, you know? And it's just everything slop. I hate it so much. It will just get worse.
Outside of like social, like Nosta social media and things that like are you talking about particular places where this happens? Like even like mainstream
blog
stuff
posts or? of companies also.
Oh really?
All kinds of things. All kinds of stuff. Yeah. And maybe they write the first paragraph themselves or so, maybe also the second. But then it's just like let's say it's a 3-page thing. The rest is all slop.
Yeah.
And it's just, and once I hit the slop I can immediately tell, and I just like, you know, I'm gonna throw up in my mouth and close the tap. That's just what's gonna happen.
Yeah.
So you must have had a similar experience also on the design side, right? Because it's just like you can immediately tell if there's LLM slop for design as well.
Yeah. Funnily enough, I think that there's actually, you know, Claude or OpenClaw, sorry, and Hermes, whatever, have their own design style.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
And you can instantly see.
Yeah, some of them really like the pills.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Some of them really like the borders.
Like they like the color of their own website.
Yeah.
Like, I think that OpenClaw's website often looks like all their websites that they make.
Yeah.
But, like, they have this weird penchant for extremely small text.
Yeah.
And I've talked to some people and they say, that's because they haven't got eyes. I was like, I'm not sure that's the direct reason. I don't know. Like, they can't see it, or they can read it themselves, rather.
Yeah.
Why would they think about a human needing to read it?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the issue, right? LLMs aren't humans, and so they have a hard time understanding, like, really, truly, properly understanding what they produce. That's also why the errors that they make are so peculiar, you know?
Yeah.
Like they don't have our, well, you know, my favorite guy, John Verveke, would say they don't have our salience landscape. Like they don't understand how it is to be a human, what it means to be a human and what we care about. And that's kind of it's my issue with the LLM slop stuff. And that relates to what you said about polishing the stone, is it's all done without care.
Yeah.
Like my criticism on LLM slop is not that you used an LLM to do your things. I use LLMs as well to do my things. But if you do something, I assume you're doing it with care.
Yeah.
And you're producing, like you're spending way more time creating the artifact than it takes me to consume it.
Yeah.
And that's the imbalance where I'm very unhappy about it, where it's just like it, for some people it will take them like 10 seconds to write the blog post or create the app or create the UI or whatever it is. And like the 10 seconds of care versus me needing like, you know, 45 minutes to decipher it, or like, I'm not going to spend the time, but if you would want to decipher it, that's the amount of time you would need.
Yeah. I think it's kind of funny because I imagine there's more content and less people were actually reading it.
Yeah.
So like, I think there's probably a massive portion of stuff being created completely uselessly.
Yeah.
Like it's not needed. No one's going to read it. And you know, and it took no time to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I agree with you there. I think it reminded me of one of my first eureka moments as a child. I actually also was into drawing. So, and I remember learning very young that if I take more time drawing it, the outcome is better. And it sounds silly, but I was just young.
Yeah.
And I was like, it was my first like experimentation. I was like, oh, if you take more time, like you can't expect things to look good or be good.
Yeah, there's a correlation there.
Put much time in it. Yeah. So I think the same with this. It's amazing that I can, you know, create the design of a website and update an existing development or a new website in like a week.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Like but you need to do the polishing, right? Yeah. Like that's the issue. It's like it's you have to go through hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of iterations. It's like you tweak a little thing there and then you do it again and then it doesn't match with the other thing you did before and so you have to tweak it again and that's kind of,
Yeah, I tried to say like handcrafted with AI. Cause I think I get worried that some people think that button wasn't me. It was the AI. It's like, no, I really like go into every detail.
Yeah.
It's just implementing it for me.
Yeah.
And all of the animation and the states and all these things.
Yeah.
And so, I'm not going to lie, sometimes it will do something magical.
Yeah.
Just like, you know, a little piece of it. Or it will do something in a way that I didn't expect it to be, but it's actually an interesting new direction.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, to me, it's like someone made the comparison to it being like power tools, you know?
Yeah.
Let's say you're wood carving and the fact that you're using power tools, it might be offensive to some, you know, very classical, everything done by hand wood carvers.
Yeah.
But if you, you know, whatever, like you take driftwood or what have you and make awesome artwork out of it and you use power tools for it, so be it. There's still lots of love and there's still lots of skill and lots of taste involved, you know?
Yeah,
and that's actually something I wanted to talk with you about. Mm. Like because you mentioned it on the I think it was on the ship. I don't know. Yeah. The days all blurred together. But that our visual cortex is so predominant. Actually our and it's again Vivekhi would point this out. Like it's interesting that we talk about taste when it comes to deciding whether something is really good or not. Like or like the metaphors we use are so interesting.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's like
very much to do with eating, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And also like eating and like tasting and smelling are very close together.
Yeah.
And like to have a nose for something is another metaphor, you know, that shows you how close together these things are. Mm. And so
that one seems more like knowledge or information rather than visual things or food, having a nose for something.
Yeah.
Would you say?
Yeah, that's potentially. Yeah. No. There's definitely a difference. There's definitely
a
difference.
Or something.
But it's more intuitive in some sense, I think. You know, like it's more having a taste for something. It's also. It speaks directly to when you taste something, you're in direct contact with it, and the thing becomes a part of you.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
So it's not one way, it's two ways, you know? It's like and with sight, like there is more distance, the contact is not as direct.
Yeah.
And you know, like the you know, I mean it's a similar thing and similar idea. Like if you stare in the abyss will stare back into you, like this stuff will happen too. But with taste it's very obvious that the stuff that you're tasting becomes a part of you. And also your taste will develop and suddenly you can develop a taste for things and have a more refined taste that
an
something
acquired taste.
An acquired taste, something that would repulse you or would repulse some people, you yeah. can suddenly start to differentiate and so on mm. and so forth. So yeah, I think again, like I've been thinking a lot about these types of metaphors and so on, because yeah. kind of what I think on the software engineering side, in part what I see happening is that the people that are attracted by it, they have a taste for freedom in some sense.
Yeah.
They have tasted it somehow, somewhere, oftentimes through the negative, through being, the banked or the platform or those right. kind of things. And I feel like on the internet side at least, like the classical internet, the legacy internet, yeah. has completely lost this. And so to me it's a lot of let's wait a little bit.
Okay, yeah, sorry.
No, that's fine.
Totally it's not just, been aware.
That's the downside of having microphones on. Like noise will just happen.
Yeah.
But how do you think about that in terms of, because you talked to me about kind of the human brain is so focused on sight, on the sense
yeah,
of sight.
Yeah, well, light, really.
Yeah.
And also our information is through yeah. light, right? Because it's the easiest, most programmable, propagandizable.
Yeah.
I don't know what you'd call it, like a, yeah, receptor.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's why we watch TVs and
yeah, yeah, yeah.
all day long, and that's why you got big TV adverts.
Yeah.
And it's just that, like, they haven't figured out how to attack our olfactory system.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and maybe it wouldn't even be worthwhile.
Yeah.
But it does make us very much focused on that, and I think we've completely lost our ability to use our olfactory system.
Yeah, yeah.
To guide
no,
us.
I definitely agree.
And I think, like, you know, if you've got a dog, you understand. Like, you sometimes anthropomorphize them.
Hmm.
So you just see them as their eyes and that's how they're doing it. But they're not good, like,
it's the nose.
At all. Yeah.
yeah.
And, like, so many things are very much, you know, using smell. And we come from that too. But I think in this modern kind of way we experience life and way we're made yeah. to experience it. You know, you lose those tools.
Oh, absolutely.
They become unsharp.
Because
I very much for a period became very much focused on that. Mm-hmm. And like, so my personal experience is that it can be really interesting and important. But yeah, I think mostly it's because the easiest way to program or get to people is through light. So
mm-hmm. yeah, yeah, it's yeah. I mean, it's interesting how different the senses are, because nothing will transport you back to childhood, but like the smell of your house.
Exactly. Yeah? How powerful is that?
Yeah. yeah. And like a photo of the house won't do it, won't do the yeah. same thing. But if you actually enter and smell yeah. the smell, then you're instantly back. So there is a massive
yeah.
difference in the way of how it registers in the brain.
Yeah.
Like
you
that's
can
for sure.
smell genes.
Yeah.
How crazy is that?
I mean, we're living in very interesting times, because there is also the people that just try to leave the modern world behind in some sense. You know, go to the jungle, stop yeah. wearing perfume, stop wearing deodorant, like, will only put yeah. anything on their skin that they can also eat, you know, yeah. like those kind of things.
Yeah.
And all the senses will quite soon come back. Like you will...
I've heard that, yeah.
You will develop a very different... smell and taste for people.
Yeah.
And wow. I mean, they run these experiments as well, right? I think there was a TV show even once where like a dating TV show where the contestants won't even see each other, but they would just like, they would get a t-shirt that the guy wore
yeah,
for
yeah.
half a day.
I remember that. Yeah.
And they would smell it. Mm-hmm. And that would be the matchmaking.
yeah.
And it's amazing how well it works. Like yeah, biology yeah. has figured out a lot of things.
Yeah.
It's way smarter. That's the thing about biology. It's way smarter and way more wise than we ever will be. And I think it's true for language as well.
Yeah.
Like there's more wisdom embedded in language than in any single person.
Yeah. My favorite quote that kind of sums it up has always been, if the brain was so simple that we could understand it, we'd be so simple that we couldn't.
Yeah. There you go.
Or like, Alan Watts would say the light doesn't know itself.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah, yeah, or the finger can't touch itself.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, those kind of things.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's how it goes. And that's also why every, and I think that relates to your expertise, like every, there is no touching without being touched.
Yeah.
And like, it's always two ways. And so if you present something visually, for example,
yeah,
it also does something to you, the way you do it. Like if you sculpt the work also does something to you. There is no creation without also being created.
Absolutely.
You know, like you can't create anything without transforming yourself, basically, in some way, shape or form. And I think that's also something like this perspective is something that we've lost in general, where it's just, I don't know, like if you talk to marketing people, for example, they don't see it that way, I would say. By and large, I don't want to be unfair to some of the stellar marketing people that do exist, but in general, you know, it's thought about one way, it's thought about, I don't know.
No, I always saw myself as I'm communicating something through design. It's a communication tool.
Yeah.
Not just a way to make something easy to use.
Yeah.
And when I was working in retail trade, and I very much like felt like, you know, why do people interact with it like a million people?
Yeah.
And I mean, like, it's communicating my ethics, my methods, what I think, you know, especially if I'm trying to do something in a more ethical way or whatever, it's communicating whatever I'm as a designer thinking and how I'm implementing it.
Yeah, I mean, all design is communication, right? You had this one quote about shapes and symbols or something like that. Remind me of it again.
Signs and symbols.
Yeah.
What was it? Signs and symbols rule the world, not words nor laws.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
And if you just look around, you know that it's immediately obvious. It's like, you know, like something stupid, like the whatever, like the here stop sign or a non-smoking sign and like those kind of things. Signs are very clearly the level above language.
Yeah.
That's why we use them also, right? It's like you don't need to translate it in like every language of the world.
Exactly,
it's like you have this one universal sign that everyone understands and in the best case, intuitively understands.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think at least in my experience, before I like thought about that more, I think there's so many things in life that have meaning, that encoded meaning, that we think are random. Like, it might even be just the way a fence is ornamented.
Yeah.
And you don't realize that the symbol in it had a reason to be there, and it has a history. And I think we think a lot of more things are arbitrary than they are. And again, it's losing our connection to the past and our history and the provenance of what we are. Yeah. And we're using all those things, like you said earlier, with language. I didn't make English, you know, but we're using it. So we are imbued in it. Mm. So we should really understand it too.
Yeah.
And I think there's a vested interest in us not doing that, obviously. Mm. But
it's also a propagandic move, right? Like one of the things that authoritarian regimes often try to do is like play around with the language and play around with the meaning of words and like change the meanings of words and so on.
Yeah.
It doesn't usually work very well, but it to a degree it does. But as to me, that's always when my alarm bells go off. If someone tries to be play loose with the language, you know, and just, you know, whatever, like there's lots of these, like in war times when you talk about collateral damage, you know.
Yeah.
No, it's like killing civilians. You slaughtered civilians. That's what you did.
Yeah, it's a euphemism or a dysphemism.
Yeah.
I think, it'd be a euphemism. Although people, for some reason, think mostly use that in like a innuendo context. Mm. So they've lost their understanding of the word euphemism.
Yeah.
It just means to make something sound better than it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they do that all the time.
Yeah.
Like,
Yeah, it triggered me so hard that I wrote a whole piece once, which was about the words we use in Bitcoin. And it was when the language started to shift and the legislators came up with the language of like an unhosted wallet, an unhosted
wallet. I remember, yeah.
So, and they would repeat that over and over again, like an unhosted wallet and how dangerous it is to have an unhosted wallet and so on. And like I was furious because it's also ingenious. Like they sat together in a room, it's like 20 people, and brainstormed this, and they came up with that, and they realized, oh wow, that's genius, that's good, let's go with that. And I was, man, I'm still furious because it's a wallet shouldn't be hosted, period. It's like, and I was so angry. I would talk with people, and the example I used, for example, oh look at all these children running around, look at all these unraped children, you know. Fuck. It's the same thing. It's a terrible thing to say, but it makes clear, like, of what they are doing.
No, that is very
you know,
clear.
It's like, no, look, these unraped children, you know? Like, it's completely insane to me that those are the tricks that they are playing when they talk about unhosted wallets and so on. And if you're uninformed and if you don't have any idea about what a wallet is, what Bitcoin represents, what, like, how the system works and so on, then you just completely glance over it and you let it slide, and it's just like, and you're okay with the term, and you might adopt the term and so on. And
I think that's, I think that is one of the oldest in our kind of times tool to change the world to, like, bad actors' benefit. Like, I think a lot of it started with the lawyers manipulating words for people to sign things, then not realize that they've just granted, like, a corporation the same as the rights of a human, things like this. So I think it's always been their tool. And it could be quite a surreptitious tool. You could do it very easy. Like, there's not people there. You can just slowly,
absolutely,
let the information out before you know it, people are talking like that, and that's it. But then they also have legal kind of ability to use it. I imagine they were doing that so they could use it later in some way, like a self-hosted wallet, things like this.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Because they're making it much more specific to hosting, and then they can say, well, you're exactly hosting something that was illegal.
Exactly, Yeah. Running an unhosted wallet is illegal. Like, that's the next step after that and so on. It's just sad to me that very few people care about these things, also care about the language. That's why also on Wednesday I brought up and to be fair, on the Nostra side there's some people that really do care about the language, for example. Like with the stuff that we are trying to do, I think language is extremely important. And I would, like, on Wednesday, I would point out the difference between a server and a relay. And, like, if you're talking about the server, like, who is the server serving, you know? Like, who's being served? Is the server serving itself? And is it like a client-server relationship, or is it a master-slave relationship, you know?
Yeah.
Those kind of things. And there's a reason why we use all these words and we use all these analogies. On the Nostra side, for example, you don't have a Nostra account, like Constant, for example, would talk about that as well.
Yeah.
And because there is no account, you only have an account if there is an accountant and he does the accounting. If there is a list, then you can't be crossed off the list.
Yeah.
You know, like, and that's where the word account comes from. It comes from the accounting side, and someone is doing the accounting, and it comes from that, of course, and like your debts can be forgiven or you can be deplatformed or whatever you have.
Yeah.
And on the Nostra side, we are in a completely different system where you don't have an account, you have a key. You have a key. With your key, you can create a profile. And it's very, very different. It's a very different system. And so the words we use actually do matter.
Yeah.
Because if you use the wrong words, you have the wrong mental picture. Then you will also build the systems in the wrong way and use them in the wrong way.
Yeah, that's interesting. Because sometimes that's hard for me as a designer, because you're, but knowing that you're being mindful about what to call things, if that's the case, then it's a different kind of challenge to onboard people to this better way of talking about things. Not necessarily you should use the existing way, because that's easier for people to understand.
Yeah.
Which is always a design challenge. Normally we lay into what they already do, but like, what you're saying now made me realize why actually I've had a lot of challenges in that area with Nostra and doing stuff as a designer.
How do you think about the hard problem of onboarding, or like even holding keys and having people manage keys and those kind of things, like from a design perspective, from an onboarding and UX perspective.
Yeah.
Because a lot of designers have like strong opinions on that.
Right.
So I'd be curious to hear yours.
I haven't really had the opportunity to tackle that problem, although I should, or maybe I just haven't taken the time.
But in some sense, you already did, right? Like you've been working on Archipelago for a very long time now. And this has to come up on the Archipelago side as well, where you run a self-sovereign node. You have to be in charge, which means you also, you're not babysitting the user to such a degree that it would feel like he has a Facebook page or whatever.
Yeah. Like, so that takes what I was going to say in a different way. Because I guess I'd call someone that's installing Archipelago like a high intent user. Mm. They've got a lot of intent, and that's why they're doing it. It's not just a casual thing.
I see.
So when you've got a high intent platform, so any user that's going to is likely has a lot of intent and time to play with this. Yeah. So it's not just a website link they went to frivolously. then it's less of a problem.
Yeah.
But then it's kind of an indirect tool now. Like, so most people say, how do we make the login analogy with Nosta or something like that, or the account analogy. But for me, it's about grabbing the user's attention and doing something that makes them interested and committed to whatever this thing is. Mm-hmm. That's what I've been trying to do.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's more powerful, you know. Like,
answering the question of like, why should they care?
Yeah.
Because if someone cares, the obstacle is not the issue.
And I think when you make it something like that, and like what I've tried to do as sovereign engineering this time, I think it's the kind of bi-directional thing you were talking about earlier. The reason that engages the person is because it's obvious the person who made it cared, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's really the fundamental layer that gives you that attention with them.
Yeah.
But you could probably make an interesting analogy, you know, on the street. Like if you're looking for a restaurant, or maybe a bar, if there's one that's just very self-effacing, nothing's happening.
Yeah.
Like less interest, but there's one, things are happening, looks like someone
done
took
with
time
to detail.
To design an evening during a week for people, you know.
Yeah.
Then you're more interested in going there.
Yeah.
You're going to look around a bit more.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's nowhere near what I thought I would be the answer. Mm-hmm. But I think, again, you need to think like laterally and do some like, the shower effect kind of work or what have you to kind of find the answers, because I don't think it's right in front of you.
Yeah. No, that's such a good point. It's also in terms of, there were two really good points in there, and kind of the high intent user. I think that's how the world already works to a large degree.
Yeah.
Like again, going back to like power tools, like if you get a certain type of machine that's like really big and dangerous, you're like, not everyone is going to get that machine.
No.
Like it will, there's a lot of trust put in the user that they can figure it out and they will not, you know, like hurt themselves immediately and so on. It's like you're the kind of guy that gets like a, whatever, like an overpowered like saw or whatever, you know, like it's like you're not a normal guy to begin with.
Yeah.
And you'll know how to handle it. And you'll, you know, there's going to be a little bit of instruction, a little bit of things to figure out, and you'll figure it out.
Yeah.
And so I feel like we are able to do all that already as a society. That's kind of, that's been my criticism from the get-go on the Bitcoin self-custody and also Nosta key management side.
Yeah.
It's like, if you get a sharp kitchen knife, you better learn how to handle a sharp kitchen knife. If you get a car, you better learn how to drive the car. You can kill yourself and you can kill others very easily.
Yeah.
If you get a firearm, you better learn to a thing or two about how firearms work and how to avoid shooting yourself in the foot and how to store them safely, especially if you have kids in the house and so on, and all those kind of things. Like, as a human civilization, we figure these things out.
Yeah.
why can't we figure out key management in a similar way? You know, because it's, to me, that's what we are talking about. It's on the level of having a car or having a firearm in terms of autonomy and in terms of self-protection. That's the level we're talking about. Like, the cars are interesting because if shit hits the fan, you can jump into the car and you can just go east. Unless you're here, you know, like, it won't do you good. But in general, if you're on the mainland, if you're not stuck on an island, you can jump into the car and you're gone. You're very, very high agency. You're very, yeah, your optionality is very high if you have a, absolutely, if you have a car.
Yeah, it's a good analogy.
With firearms, you have self-defense. You know, like, it's if that's why in Texas, like, people don't fuck around, you know, like, everyone, jeez, everyone in Texas is like armed to the teeth, and it's a very polite society, yeah, right? and so to me, Bitcoin represents, especially Bitcoin, but to some degree, Nostr as well, like, everything that has to do, everything that bases its whole being on cryptographic keys, the cryptographic keys have this level of importance. If shit hits the fan, you can put the 12 words in your head if you want to, and you can leave the country. You know, that's what we're talking about. And I mean, on the other side, of course, it's identity, it's encrypted communication, it's all those kind of things, which also are incredibly important. It's your online life, basically.
Yes.
If you base your online life on Nostr, you can take your life with you. If you base your financial life on Bitcoin, you can take your wealth and all your financial infrastructure with you.
Yeah.
And no one can take it away from you. That's what we're talking about. And people are whining about, oh, it's so hard to write down 12 words or whatever, or to use a hardware wallet or like Ordinal, which one to get, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, back to what you said. Back to what you said. You have to get people, grab people's attention, and in the end, make them care. Like, make them curious and enough, and then, like, help them understand why they should care, right? And that's kind of the challenge at hand, I think, from the design perspective to a large degree, or also from the engineering perspective. It's like, I don't know, like, they blend together.
I think we also have to remember that we are sort of unfucking this thing. So along with that comes, you're really trying, people have done this really badly. It's programmed in us, and our care for our account information, emails, logins, services is so low, so throwaway, that, you know, this is going to be a challenge.
Yeah,
and it's, the challenge isn't because Nostr is bad or these things are bad. It's just, this is decades of programming.
Yes, and we have to undo now.
Going the wrong way that we need. Mm. Yeah, we need to fight. And sometimes it will take that first person that does it, and then he shows it as a friend, and then it's viral, just like anything else was in the early internet.
Yeah.
Early internet, like you were saying earlier, there was a lot more intent. And there was, you know, there was, you know, that virality can come to Nostr. That, and I remember people learning how to do things on the internet, taking time.
Yeah, yeah. Writing down URLs from the backs of magazines.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think sometimes we're very, I mean, it's great to talk about all these things, but sometimes it seems like we're worried it's not going to work, or we're worried we're doing it wrong. And worrying is creative. But I think we forget the low time frame.
We forget that things take time.
We're talking it so, like, you know, frantically, but like, this is a long-term project. It's going to take a long time.
Absolutely, absolutely.
We'll get there.
Absolutely, yeah. And that's kind of why, the larger goal of the cohorts is to get the right people involved that either explicitly or intuitively understand this, and to, you know, like, assemble a loose group of people that can work together for long periods of time to actually solve some of these issues. Like, that's kind of the idea behind that.
And they're very high intent.
You need high agency people, otherwise nothing would happen. but because, like, in a normal context, we often talk about high bandwidth interaction and cross-pollination of ideas and all those kind of things, and all of that is true, but that's like one one level of analysis when it comes to what we're trying to do here. The very long-term thing is that we actually want to solve all the issues that we are facing right now in the current iteration of the internet, which is in part due to centralized infrastructure, in other part due to centralized services and to servers turning evil and all those kind of things. Yeah. And having a, also having a, like you said, you know, like a population of internet users that is just very on a very bad path. Yeah, in some sense, very low agency path.
Yeah.
And you must know about the concept of a netizen, like the a citizen of the internet.
Yeah, yeah.
And we also used to have on the in the early internet days the concept of the netiquette. I'm not sure if that might have been a German thing. Now that I think about it. It's like an etiquette. It's like an etiquette, like how to behave. I'll have to look that up again. But that's basically how to be polite online. Nice. You know, like those kind of things.
That's definitely gone.
And it is very much gone. Like some of those things are still around where like it's you can never know. There's like some name law, whatever. I don't know the name of the law. But you can never tell if someone is being legit or sarcastic online. Like sarcasm doesn't transfer.
Yeah.
And so you always have to indicate sarcasm explicitly, basically. And so the rules online are definitely different than they are in meat space.
Yeah.
But I feel kind of that's the challenge at hand. One of them is technical, the other and to me the technical design and technical implementation to me are very much welded together.
Yeah.
Like they kind of have to be, and I think from it, the social change follows. I think to me it's technology first, social change. After. Birth control pill is a great example. Yeah. Internal combustion engine is a great example. Printing press is a great example. Mm-hmm. Smartphones are a great example. Looks like this would have never happened. Someone sitting at the beach.
Yeah.
Most beautiful. She missed the pirate boat. Like the pirate boat is shipping by and she's just staring into the phone. Here, same thing. Everyone's staring.
Not only that, she also probably cares less about the pirate boat if she saw it because of the way we interact, you know?
Yeah.
I think everything is less interesting.
Selfies. There are selfies being taken. Very self-centered society.
That's pretty much it, yeah.
So what's the way out?
The way out?
Yeah, what's the way out of
this tunnel?
What's the way out of the current situation?
What is the current situation?
The self-centered society and the techno monopolies that we have to live with right now. Mm. And kind of the very, you know, like you can't even talk about suicide or abortion on like Facebook without being deplatformed, for example. Like, what's the way out?
It's funny how close that is to like the 1984 thing, but I think when it's even in front of us, we can't see it. Like, all these YouTubers that are proactively censoring themselves and talk about it.
Yeah.
Now we have new names for like PDF files.
Yeah.
Like all this stuff. Like it's happening, but I think. Because it's not happening in the way it happened. We were shown on the film version of a 1984.
Yeah.
You can't see it, but.
No, the chilling effect is definitely real, especially on the YouTube side, you know, like they'll bleep themselves and because you get demonetized instantly, right?
Yeah.
And that's the line you have to skate around, basically. And yeah, do you think kind of speaking to the low time preference idea you just mentioned before, do you think we're on the right path on the Nostra side, or do you think something more different is needed?
I think I see Bitcoin as a child of Nostra is a child of Bitcoin, and then so for instance FIPS is like a child of Nostra and Bitcoin. I think I'm seeing, like, for me, I always saw Bitcoin as the foundation. And a lot of people see Bitcoin as the end layer, right? But Bitcoin is just the start of this new thing.
Yeah.
So it's not just the money. It's not like, which a lot of people think it is.
Yeah.
I think Bitcoin is the layer where, like you say, what's the solution? I think Bitcoin was the solution. And we're going to see it slowly creating.
Mm.
Like, for me, Bitcoin is a seed and it's just a sapling at the moment.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
But you want to see the whole tree.
Yeah.
But it's just going to take time. And for me, I think Bitcoin's greatest gift will be all the things that come out of it.
I mean, you're preaching to the choir.
And Nostra's just that first one. Yeah. Of course, I'm not.
I have a similar mental image, and I love what's currently happening on lots of the Nostra project and so on, that lots of OTS is used, like open timestamping, where you anchor into the Bitcoin chain to create a proof of existence.
Yeah.
And from that, you can build up reputation systems that are very hard to cheat and like those kind of things. So, yeah, it's definitely happening. And I think I'm very, very optimistic. I think we just, again, it's not only a marathon, it's like an ultra marathon, not a sprint.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, that is my answer. It's already happening. It was already initiated.
Awesome.
But it's not necessarily just going to be the buddy.
Yeah.
But like, I guess that's why Bitcoin feels so divine. It's because, like, I think because we're such high time frame society now.
Mm.
Like capitalist realism. It's like capitalism is so ingrained that the zombie apocalypse seems more likely than change into a different system.
Yeah. Yeah, and on the time preference side, I mean, it's like from quarterly profit to quarterly profit, right? Like that's basically the time frame.
Yeah.
If we want to be generous, if we talk about the TikTok generation, it's like 10 seconds to 10 seconds or whatever the duration is. I don't even know. Probably less than that.
At once now.
Really? Two at once?
Yeah, one.
Oh my god. Oh my lord. They discovered split screen. Oh my god. It's going to be its own operating system very soon. Anyway, no, I actually think the kids are going to be all right. Jonathan mentioned this yesterday on the boat as well, but in a different context. He mentioned that he's glad that, you know, the next generation of people are picking up sovereign tech and are being good stewards to it. That was lovely to hear from someone like him who has been around for ages.
Yeah, that is what we're saying, happening slowly.
Yeah.
In motion.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Epigenetics.
Yeah.
Like people say, the funny thing for me is like you can't force things on your kids.
Mm.
But like you can see, it's not forcing now that you've got these children and people and Nostra people, like that's who they are. They don't have to force it.
Yeah.
It's just like how they live their life.
It's a way of life, yeah.
Yeah. Which is, it's just going to be normal.
Yeah.
Like that's how things work.
Yeah. Yeah.
But also they've got to fight the oligarchs' children.
Yeah.
Which are going to probably be 10 times more psychopathic. Never met a real pleb in there, ever. Like, who knows what they're up against.
We're heading into interesting times, that's for sure. But yeah, you mentioned the divine aspect of kind of, and maybe also the divine timing of Bitcoin appearing.
Timing is the big one with
everything. And you're not alone with that kind of line of thinking and that type of commentary. So I didn't say any of that stuff out loud when the thoughts started appearing.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of, or more than you would think, more people than you would think on the Bitcoin side that would say something like that. What makes you say that Bitcoin is divine or has some divinity in it?
That's so hard to describe.
The ineffable. Describe the ineffable for me, please.
I guess like you could see like divine information, like convergence or something, or you know, like I guess divinity comes from the old divinity is having a vision.
Mm-hmm.
Or what have you. And I think we have a lot of problem describing Bitcoin. Is it a religion? Is it a cult? Is it, what is it?
Mm.
But like maybe it's this new paradigm thing.
Yeah.
Because you know, paradigms have to start. There was no religion and then there was. Yeah?
Yeah.
And like this is another paradigm. So Have it's you... our best analogy. I think for me, it's my best analogy, and it's a feeling of what is happening. What you're going from utter nihilism to absolute hope, like during Bitcoin, was just like the craziest thing ever. Like I was at the
crazy
end.
Personal transformation. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it saved my life, literally.
Yeah.
Along with some other things, so.
Yeah.
It does almost feel like intervention, you know, in my life. Like.
Yeah, you're not alone with saying that. Like, yeah. Not at all. Yeah.
And it gives me a lot. I guess it gives me a purpose and a focus, and it does make my life better. My life just gets better and better.
Yeah, yeah, your life suddenly
freer
is meaning,
than
right?
ever. I'm at Sovereign Engineering.
Yeah.
I've had the best, you know, time here too. It felt like this is the time that I should come, and, you know, I don't know, just... And maybe it's the way, maybe it's how it changed my outlook and my perspective that feels like, you know, it's divine, but...
Yeah.
Maybe divinity is just, you know, having purpose, feeling happier, being freer.
Yeah,
all those things.
I think a lot of people that study this stuff would agree with that statement. It's basically once you have, the question is, what goal should you pursue? Like in every 5 minutes, it's like, what should you do next? Basically, you know, like, and we are goal oriented, action oriented beings. So the question becomes, what in the hierarchies of goals that you want to pursue in your life? Like, how should you orient yourself so that you best achieve these goals? The problem with nihilism is, like, if you don't have any goals, then you have no orientation and you're completely lost. You're lost at high sea and you don't know which way to turn and which way to go and what to do and so on. And everything is meaningless.
Yeah.
And the divinity comes in, like, once you realize there is something at the very top.
Yeah.
That you can't talk about, that you can't describe, that you can't explain, but that drives everything, and then also by definition drives you. Like, that's the thing you should pursue forever, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
With the maximum intensity without falling apart, you know.
Yeah.
keeping self-preservation in mind, but even then, you know, like that's why in the religious domain, like also self-sacrifice is an option. You know, like that goal. Is so important that people will literally sacrifice themselves for that and so on.
Right.
And I think, I mean, we talked about this briefly in the past, but to me, why Bitcoin is so interesting is because it is a now I'll
sorry.
this will be weird to people. This is gonna be a weird thing to say, but I'll say it anyway. It's a real thing. It's a real artifact.
Yeah.
Even though you can't touch it. But as a computer scientist, I can say and I can see, like, it's as real as it gets in the computer science domain. It's as, like, if something is made out of zeros and ones, Bitcoin is as real as it gets. It doesn't get more real than that.
Yeah, that's our paradigm.
and it is a massive paradigm shift because we never had anything exist out of zeros and ones that, like, completely reshapes the world and actually has physical existence in the world. And Bitcoin does have physical existence in the world.
And it's not limited either.
No, it's not. Exactly. Which is, again, like a divine idea in some sense. Like it has a beginning, but it doesn't have an end, not necessarily. Mm-hmm. And it's to me, it's still the bridge between the purely informational digital realm, like the realm of ideas, basically, to the real electrons and atoms, physical reality that we find ourselves in. Bitcoin was able to build that bridge.
Yeah.
And so to me, it's the realest thing that exists because it's like, absolutely. like all this, we could be, again, like this could be a dream or a simulation or whatever and so on. But you do the math on Bitcoin and you look at the zeros and ones and you look at the, you know, like the block header and so on. And you, like you understand how the system works. Uh-huh. There is provable realness embedded in Bitcoin. And that's what makes it, to me, real.
Yeah.
But the bridge I spoke about, that's what I, like, just like you, like I self-identified as an atheist for, I don't know, like 2 decades or something.
Yeah.
Now I don't know. Like now I legit, like I don't have labels except for Bitcoin.
No.
But the fluffy concepts in the cloud of, like, you know, like a spirit of something. And so again, like my opening talk of sovereign engineering was like building something in the spirit of Bitcoin. Like that tells you something about where I'm at. But Bitcoin has a spirit, and this is a spiritual entity defined in code. You know, like you can change the Bitcoin code and so on and so on and so forth. But through the proof of work bridge and the consensus mechanism bridge that builds up over time and all those kind of things, it has physical existence. And that was my way, not necessarily out of nihilism. I wasn't as heavily on the nihilism road as you've been.
Yeah.
But it was definitely my way out of atheism, interestingly enough. Yeah. It was like there, oh, I get it now. Like there can be there, I don't know, like there is a higher instance, and I'm not necessarily talking about God yet, you know. It's we briefly talked about this a couple of days ago, I think. Just talking about like how a city, for example, can have a certain, like we often say a charm or something, like there's a charm to a city. Or like the example I always bring up is like the Chicago Bulls have their own mind, you know, like the Chicago, that even if everyone changes, every player changes, the coach changes, everyone changes, it's still the Chicago Bulls. It has this identity, and that's what helped me on the Bitcoin side. Bitcoin showed this very, very clearly. Bitcoin wants to be a thing, is a thing. It's very hard to describe and define that thing. It has physical existence, but it is also a there's a spiritual side to Bitcoin. Like technically, I mean, you know, like the software code that's running is not a chair. You know, like it's zeros and ones. And but there is the physical instantiation of Bitcoin, and they're somehow linked together. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of I had a very big aha moment and some realizations, and that kind of opened me up to more religious thoughts, and even though I hate the world, but the word, but more spiritual thinking and like those kind of things.
I think we all agree to hate that word. We haven't got a better one.
I don't know. I realized there was a lot. I hope it wasn't all gibberish. So
no.
It's. And the fact that it's still happening and it's still ongoing, like Bitcoin still has this effect on people.
Yeah.
It's insanely interesting to me. Like people keep having these spiritual transformations because of the fucking orange coin. And I still don't know what to make of it. Like I have no idea kind of, you know, like what it all means and
for me, it just feels like a film almost, like when I think about it sometimes. Like this whole aura is like,
it's very surreal.
Book or a film.
Yeah.
You know, anonymous guy creates this thing, perfect timing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, in my head, when you say that, I see almost like an animation because I think very visually, but I just see all these people just suddenly with the mycelium of Bitcoin just kind of pop and then becoming like, you know, reborn.
Yeah.
You know, new person.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's slow.
Yeah.
But maybe like ultimately that's what it is.
Have you read Snow Crash by any chance?
No.
No?
No.
It's a great science fiction book. And the line you mentioned before, like just like 10, 15 minutes ago. like, is it a religion or is it like, what is it? It's a line from Snow Crash. Cool. And it's basically like there's Snow Crash. It's a computer virus and it has this effect on people. So it's some of I read it because of Bitcoin. So it got recommended by some early Bitcoiners to me, and it's a fantastic book. Highly recommend. So we're living in very weird times, and I do remain very hopeful though. Like what we saw on just the last 18 months alone, like I talked about the 18 months of, you know, LLM slop and the negative sides of it.
Yeah.
But on the positive side, like for us, for sovereign engineering, vibe coding is just like, it's such a superpower. It's so, it's such a godsend, really.
Yeah, really.
Because the whole point of the program is to build prototypes so that we have something in hand that we can discuss ideas and iterate from there and so on. And building a working prototype without vibe coding, pre-vibe coding, was really hard.
Yeah, I talked to some people about Sovenge pre-vibe coding.
It's still painful now. It's still very intense now. But pre-vibe coding, it was torture. It was pure torture. And I'm speaking from experience. Like I showed a demo. I demoed every Friday. Like I'm, you know, I try to walk the walk as well, not only talk the talk.
Yeah.
And it was legit torture. Now, like, you can just tell the clankers, you know, like, use this to deploy an inside, yeah, whatever, you know, like, can we make it work on FIPS? And hit enter,
yeah,
and just like watch the clanker do its thing for a couple of minutes, and yeah, it just works.
Which again, I think, like, for me, we're talking about all these things falling into place. That feels like a big piece falling into place.
Yeah.
For what we're trying to do to unlock, you know, change things.
Yeah.
Like, and we normalize it so quickly though, because like, so many people probably just forgotten what it was like already, yeah, right? It's become the new norm quite quickly.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's just one of those other things for me. It just feels like all these, it feels like, you know, the pressure got so hard on Earth or the universe that it had to burst out the other side. Mm-hmm. And Bitcoin was that burst, like, of just, this is enough. and it feels like, you know, just like everything's aligning in this weird way. And maybe that happens because we're all aligning, I don't know. With Bitcoin, I feel I am aligned with it, I think.
Yeah.
That's why.
Yeah, I agree.
Almost like in that spiritual way.
Yeah.
Like, I'm calibrated with its
frequency. Yeah. Isn't that strange? Isn't that strange how that works, right? And it's I love the saying, you know, like, you can't change Bitcoin, but Bitcoin changes you.
Yeah.
And that's, I see, I've observed that happening for like the last 10 years plus.
Yeah.
And again, to me, because in the beginning, I thought it might be like an early phenomenon.
Yeah.
And the fact that it's still happening and it keeps on happening gives me a lot of hope, because it actually does realign people. And yeah, and more importantly, even like it realigns values. It realigns your value system.
Yeah.
I think that's also why it's so disorienting sometimes. And so a lot of people are so repulsed by it. Like, if you're... if your value system is the polar opposite of the Bitcoin value system, you'll be repulsed by it. Yeah. You'll hate it.
Can't imagine.
No, you'll hate it. And for me, for example, like, I never cared about money at all. I didn't know, like, or about whatever, the economy or like anything economics. I had no idea. I didn't care about it at all. Never
I did the second the Bitcoin came out. I didn't know about it.
Mm.
But for me, I started caring about money and got obsessed with it outside of Bitcoin the very same time.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. And then I found Bitcoin later.
Interesting. Okay. Okay. Like, so you had a money phase.
Something changed in me, yeah.
So
yeah,
you
I was obsessed.
Yeah? Yeah. And kind of making money?
I was obsessed with how money works. How the hell did this happen? This crap.
So you learned about the fiat system pre-Bitcoin. Like, before you discovered Bitcoin?
No, the same time. But the same time Bitcoin was released.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, 2008 is when suddenly it was.
Okay, so there was the big financial crisis and everything went to shit.
But
I
was really pissed off.
And you.
Yeah,
because I started digging.
Yeah, I saw people like at HSB showing how the banks are literally allowing the cartels to launder money through their teller window, giving them instructions, there's this guy outside HSBC. And no one fucking cares. No one cared. No one.
They built special windows so that the boxes fit
they
through.
They told them exactly the size, so maximum capacity.
Yeah.
And
let's not do the stairs again.
Yeah. But yeah, no one cared. It really pissed me off.
Yeah.
And then I got obsessed with that, and that's how I ended up in working in finance.
Interesting.
I found Bitcoin, and then I tried to get in Bitcoin, and then I worked in finance. But I was trying to do good in finance. But
I see. Change the system from the inside.
It doesn't work.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
At all. Right. Got very angry.
Oh, wow. That's quite a thing. Quite a career you got behind you.
Yeah. Well...
Yeah, now for me it's interesting because, like, I think I mentioned a couple of days ago, like, I was on the, I was living in the Star Trek universe. I was like,
oh yeah,
okay, we're close. It seems on the physics side we're close to figuring out fusion. So let's just figure out fusion. We'll have limitless energy. Mm-hmm. We are doing well on kind of the nanophysics and so on side.
Oh yeah.
Let's figure out replicators. And once we have limitless energy plus replicators, why would we need money?
Yeah.
You know, like you just, you have a little microwave kind of thing or whatever, and you press a button and anything comes out.
Yeah.
Why would you need money? Like that's where my economic understanding was.
Yeah. I think the word, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I think the word money is just the wrong, we need a new one. Because it's not the thing you then have in your hand. Like it's so much bigger than that.
Yeah, I mean,
it's like a glue. So like, why would you have 100%. Money from that? It's like,
that's why.
What could you do without it? Everything would collapse.
It's the blood of society.
Yeah.
And you would still need it even if you would have cold fusion and replicators. Yeah. Like I can tell all the Star Trek fans that much. the Star Trek universe would still need money.
Yeah. Now I watch those things, I'm like, can't even watch it. That's stupid.
And the way I think about it now, to me. In the economy, money, price signals, are attention tokens in some sense. You know, it's like what should be produced, what to pay attention to. If there's a shortage, price shoots up. You don't need to know anything else. You don't need to know why the shortage happens. Nothing. It's just, you just need to look at the price, and there is way more profit to be made when the price shoots up. So the shortage will be solved.
Yeah.
Because entrepreneurial types will come in and try to make more of it and so on, and then you'll find an equilibrium again and so on. Like that's one aspect of money, you know, that you would still need if you have replicators, because the question of like what to replicate still exists. You don't have infinite time, so what to replicate is still, as long as time still exists, you need some form of money. YouTube shows this very clearly. The money inside YouTube is attention.
Yeah,
it's watch time and it's attention, and it's literally the money. That's literally how everything is measured, and you need to have some price signal in an economy, in a complex system, to coordinate consumption and production. And YouTube has the two.
Yeah.
You've limitless supply, basically. You still need money. You still need some type of money to answer the question of like, what should I present you next, for example?
Yeah.
You know, like, and all those kind of things. And so I obviously, you know, changed my mind on a lot of things and had to burn my old self to the ground I started aligning with Bitcoin. Now I really care about money, but only in the sense of like capital M money, you know, like what money is and how it should work and what is a healthy money and what isn't.
Mm-hmm.
And in the same sense, like I care about Bitcoin in a capital B Bitcoin kind of sense. Like I care about, like, again, like if I'm getting wiped for whatever reason, I don't care. Like if my, you know, I wake up and my sad balance, you know, like my family would care.
Yeah.
My wife would care. But that's not what I'm doing this stuff. I really care about capital B Bitcoin and you know, I don't know, being along for the ride mostly, I guess.
Yeah.
And kind of trying to do what I can to be a midwife to some of the ideas, at least, you know. Like I think I've been around the coin long enough to got a lot of exposure to a lot of the different ideas, and I think I developed a taste, to come back to that metaphor, of like what has a chance of working and what doesn't.
Yeah.
And so that's what gives me a lot of joy on the sovereign engineering side, like being on the forefront and kind of seeing what people come up with and having discussions around the various projects and ideas and you know, like prototypes and so on and so forth. But yeah, you were knocked out on the boat yesterday. I went around interviewing everyone. So yeah. I'll ask the same question to you now. Looking back at the last 6 weeks, what were your kind of highlights, like anything goes in terms of projects or stuff that happens? Or
I had a bit of a like, wow, this is real moment. So obviously I bring a slightly different perspective coming from design. I'm very user focused, I'm very, it was smallest interaction focused, and what even like a mundane thing kind of does. And a big thing, like I've tried a lot of different things with Archipelago. All the things have been tried in different ways. Some of them didn't work, some of them better than others, but one big thing is just having it on your phone, because we're phone centric. So if you've got a node, you need access from your phone. I didn't really think that the existing apps are very good. Like I love Zeus, but like Zeus isn't working for me. It won't connect to my node, I'm not sure why. But so I've made a companion app, and I was like, I was like, oh, and then we need to use a VPN. What VPN would we use? How do we make this all like completely frictionless and not the model where you need to download the app you don't know about to be able to make it work? And I implemented FIPS. And it didn't matter if I was on Wi-Fi or on the 5G. I scanned the thing with my mobile app to connect to my node. And it was just incredibly fast. It was the craziest thing I've ever seen. I think it was faster than on the local area network on my laptop.
Insane.
And then
it just worked.
And then I went away from it on different Wi-Fis and on a 5G. Like, you know, although the physical space between doesn't really matter. And it was still fast. And I was just showing this to everyone. I was just like, look
at this. You don't understand. You don't understand what you're witnessing.
Yeah. And at one point I was like, is it just, like, I thought it wasn't real. it's like something's gone wrong.
Am I hallucinating?
Yeah. And then I showed it to one of the guys, and I was like the fifth, sixth person. I was like, I'm showing it to them, but they all know this. He just goes, yeah, FIPS is fast. So yeah, I think, yeah, FIPS. I didn't get my FIPS thing last time when it was such a big thing. And then I came here and it's been quite a theme. So it's an obvious one, but like that really, I thought about your talk and I thought about the cypherpunks in the 90s or 80s or whenever that cover was, and then I felt like we were in the new version of that now. We like had a big like feeling, like again, not a head feeling, like a body, but it goes up and down. I used to go up and down between nihilism and I'm okay, and now it's between an absolute like total
mania,
faith, hope to maybe it won't work. So it's like the higher.
But that's just how it goes. There was also a reoccurring theme yesterday on the boat when I talked to everyone. It's like, you know, summer engineering is great, but it has like very high highs and very low lows.
Yeah. Let's say extreme highs and extreme lows.
Yeah, that's how it goes. So what's next for you? What comes after sovereign engineering? Do you know already? Like we are, tomorrow is going to be the last day.
So Archipelago, just keep on doing it. It's I don't even have to think about money to make it work. It's the thing I always work on. That's what I believe in.
Awesome.
I believe in trying it anyway. It's not like this is going to fix everything. It's just I want to make it. But since I've dedicated myself to Bitcoin, and again, it wasn't my variable that made that determination. I wasn't able to make it for myself. It happened when I had no other options. Bitcoin was the only path. Is the only viable path. And ever since I've done that, you know, everything's just got better and better. I work on the things I want to work on, things, you know, that I didn't make up. This is my dream to work at London Stock Exchange or something like that. And I'm getting more exposure in the community that it wasn't, I don't think this community allows you in like super easy into their hearts and souls, minds. Like, not because they don't want you, but like I think you need to do some proof of work.
I'm not surprised at all.
Like,
like a bunch of, you know, highly skeptical, highly paranoid people, you know. Like everyone you don't know is a spook, you know, those, these kind of mindsets. And then just, you know, I mean, to me, what's awesome is that we have such varied backgrounds in sovereign engineering. People come from all over the place, but everyone kind of like to end up that type of person, you went through a lot of shit, you know, and it's just like everyone, you know, had their various rug pulls along their path. And so I think the skepticism and the, you know, like the in-group dynamic that forms, it comes from lots of trauma, you know, and from a good place as well. People want to be protective. I mean, I'm going to give you the same small piece of advice that I gave you the very first time I think we spoke.
Okay.
Like you'll have to push Archipelago out into the open and let people use it. Like you have to do it. Okay. It's the stone is very polished.
Yeah.
The stone is very, very polished.
Yeah. It's just a new way of life for me. So
yeah. You'll have to let people look at the marvel at the diamond you have been polishing for like many months.
Yeah. Thanks.
So yeah, but really, like seriously, good job on Archipelago.
Thank you.
It's really, really good, and I'm glad that, you know, like Phipps was one small puzzle piece that made one thing like work even better and so on. And that's just what gives me a lot of joy, that lots of the things that came out of Sovereign Engineering, it like the whole goal is to build these little puzzle pieces that just make everything work better, like from itself, Sovereign perspective.
Yeah.
And I'm really glad that it's working, you know? And
for me, this was the place I needed to go to make Archipelago the best it possibly could be. I don't think anywhere else would provide me with that information.
Enough crazy people?
Just the right people, like who together, like Archipelago, I can do it right.
Yeah.
Outside the design.
Yeah.
But yeah, in answer to your question, it's just Bitcoin. I'm getting more Bitcoin work, more Bitcoin design, helping people on open source projects make their more diamond looking.
Awesome. So all the devs that might be hearing that, like the 2.5 that are left, they should reach out to you.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Awesome.
It's a pleasure to help in whatever way I can on people's projects.
Awesome. I'll the clankers will put everything in the show notes. I won't do shit, man. Like it's such a godsend as well. Like that's what I want to do more of, is like just produce very real artifacts. And like the clankers can derive some stuff from that, but you know, like this recording is not LLM generated.
Yeah.
And like similar, I think similar about my writing and my apps as well. It's like it really has to come from a very pure place. And if you do some clankering around that, like that's perfectly fine.
Clanker around the edges.
Yeah, exactly. Clanker around the edges. But it the human soul has to produce the artifact. That's kind of. It has to be the driving force. Mm. Like if we put the clankers in charge, we're gonna be in hell very soon.
Mm. We have to be the higher power.
Absolutely. Any last words before we press stop?
No.
I'm pretty done. I'm happy to continue as well. But
I just had one comment earlier from earlier. It was just about how Bitcoin changes people, and you've seen it.
And let's do one more walk to the stairs and back. Are you up for it?
Yeah.
No, I don't want to.
I just reminded because I wanted to say it, and but the most fascinating thing for me about that part is that how I've seen people transformed by it that are not technical or not a developer, not even a money person, and also their transformation is very. Like spiritual looking as well.
Yeah.
Like it blows my mind. Like, and it's real. It's not like a trick.
Yeah.
That's crazy to me. I think there's an essence of Bitcoin we can't see. That just.
I think the universe is telling us to turn around and remain in the shade.
But yeah, that was my final comment.
A wild chainsaw appears. Like we're not gonna head down that path. But yeah, to me, it's also fascinating that it has been an entry point to a lot of people rediscovering more traditional facets of their own culture and like becoming more religious and like returning to Christianity, for example, and like those types of things, or wherever you're coming from. Like lots of people I interface with have a Christian background,
giving things a second look as well.
It's interesting because I think what you said is very right. Like it's a real phenomenon. Like those people aren't faking it. Like they don't sign up to an Orthodox church, you know, like just for whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And it's a broader phenomenon. Like this is happening outside of Bitcoin as well, and some people talk about it. It points to what you mentioned before, with just the pressure got too high, and something had to burst through. Mm-hmm. And so there is the concept of like the reemergence of the sacred, basically. Mm. And to me, Bitcoin definitely is a sacred artifact.
Yeah,
it really is. And and it's just like of utmost importance. Like it's and lots of people, I agree. I think that's in part what the spam wars are over, because like graffiti is a form of defiling something, right? Yeah. And so the sacred artifact gets defiled with spam, and that's why people are religious about it. They really are religious about it.
Yeah.
And as they should be, I think, you know, like it's that's kind of, I don't know, like, to, what's also interesting to me is like that a lot of people that talk about these things, they don't see Bitcoin at all. Mm. And definitely not as a spiritual artifact. And I think this will happen eventually, the bridge between the conversations about the reemergence of the sacred and kind of like with sacred money now. That's how I see it. Yeah. And money is actually important. It's just like having sacred texts and sacred language. There's some languages that are sacred in the sense of, you know, there are some verses and some lines and so on that are sacred, that are being chanted, for example, and have been chanted for thousands of years and so on and so forth. And people understand how important language is. Again, like the logos, you know, the logos is sacred in Christianity.
Yeah.
It is like in the beginning there was the word, you know, it's like people have an intuitive understanding how important language is. They don't have an intuitive understanding of how important money is.
No.
And it's on a similar level. And the Bible will tell you, like, only gold and silver, everything else is a shitcoin. It will literally tell you, you know, like, but Bible was written pre-Bitcoin, so we'll have to, you know, do an amendment or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's,
all the denominations that came out of the first religion.
Yeah.
Ethereum.
Oh my God. Yeah. We'll see what happens with all that. Like I just in the interest of my sanity, I stepped away from this a little bit, like took my foot off the gas, because I still have to operate in normal life, basically, you know, like in the real world to some degree, not be too embarrassing when I, you know, go out with my wife or something.
Yeah.
So those kind
of
things.
I've already been that guy here once.
But it's still happening. And like I would be actually interested to hear from people that where this kind of alignment and this transformation was rather recent, you know, for me, it's just a long time ago now. It's like 8 years ago, you know, where I had like I was reborn in some sense, but I know that it's still going on. Like people reach out to me sometimes, and I hear from people that go through this.
I got lost a few times during it as well, though. But initially, I was reborn perfectly, but I was led astray.
That's how it works.
So, but I'm here.
Yeah,
I'm
you here see the stay. Light, but you can't stare into it. You'll turn blind. That's just how it goes. All right, let's keep it there.
Yeah.
Big hug.
Yeah.
That was great.
Yeah.
That was great. I'll have to find the stop button. We didn't hit skateboarding. I'm surprised, actually.
Oh.
Yeah. But maybe we'll manage next time.
Yeah. I don't think anyone's done that yet. Skateboarding and Bitcoin.
We'll do it.
So, I think so.
All right, that looks good.
Yeah.
That 90 minutes on the spot.
Oh, not bad.